Okay, we're good.
I should have brought my. Oh, I kind of updated my list too. Damn it.
What?
I kind of refined my list, and you know, I didn't. I shouldn't say that. I didn't refine. I made a new one.
Okay.
And it was. I went through like every year from 1970 to 2017, and I said, okay, what is the best film of that year?
This sounds thrilling.
And it was great. It was a lot of fun. And I had my picks. And every time I thought that there was a year that was better than another year, I'd cross that entire year off. So I was very, very picky and specific. And I'm like, I want to find out what I think are the absolute bests of all time.
And it was, I
narrowed it down.
What do you mean?
So it's say for like you have 2015 versus 2016. It's like I picked like La La Land, The Witch, and Manchester by the Sea as like a three-way tie for best films of 2016.
Okay.
But then 2015 was Mad Max Fury Road, and I thought that movie's better than all three of those movies, so I just crossed 2016 off.
Got you.
That's how
so you wanted to arrive on the best movie year or the best movie?
No, just best movies, period.
Okay, got it.
So it was a list of like 42 movies.
So did you see an emerging pattern? Because that's always what I'm interested in when a list is made like that.
I mean, I'd need to look at it again. Not really. It's kind of varied, actually, I think. It wasn't necessarily Oscar bait movies, if that's what you're talking about.
Sure. What arrived at number one?
At the number ones, I mean, Jaws was on there, Taxi Driver, kind of the obvious ones. But I also had Chinatown, which came out the same year as The Godfather Part Two. And I was thinking about it.
Tough.
So I was like, my rule was
that will never happen again.
I know.
Isn't that amazing? That will never happen again. Yeah.
No, exactly. Well, my rule was if it comes down between two films if it comes down between a couple films in a year that are just, it's too hard to pick, you can narrow it down to three per year. So that's what I did. And they're like 1984 was actually a tough one because it was like Paris, Texas, The Terminator. What the hell was on? What else was on there? Jesus Christ. I'm trying to remember. Repo Man.
The 80s are tough.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, 87, I think my two picks were RoboCop and Predator.
That says all I got to say about the 80s.
Yeah. Those, unfortunately, got crossed off, even though they're two of my favorites. But yeah. I had to be very, very harsh about it.
No, I mean, the 70s are so in a league of their own. It's insane.
Mm-hmm. You know, surprisingly, there were quite a few entries in the 2000s that had a bunch of ties.
Yeah?
Yeah, like 2007.
I think 2007 could be the strongest movie year since 1994.
I have my three.
This is getting very nerdy, but I think if I had to measure, 94 is the best year for the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Shawshank, Forrest Gump.
I crossed off
Pulp
Forrest
Fiction.
Gump.
Yeah. Okay, whatever. But those.
But yeah, no, exactly.
Those are the three. Generally. I think even Jurassic Park was 93, but it was, or what? It was 90. It was
93. Yeah.
Okay. So 94 is the best on that, and then 2007 is No Country.
There will be blood, and then Zodiac's on there. I had trouble with that one too.
What else is 2000? Michael Clayton, wasn't that also 2007?
Maybe.
Do you not like Michael Clayton?
I haven't seen it.
Oh no!
I haven't had any interest.
Clayton, the Fixer. Michael Clayton's great.
I'm not a George Clooney fan. So.
I don't care. Michael Clayton's incredible. That's an incredible movie.
I'm sure it is, but I'm just trying to illustrate maybe why I haven't jumped to seeing it.
Oh, the ending is so good, and Tilda Swinton's great in it. No, my God, I love that movie. I love Fixer movies, though.
Mm.
I'm a big fan of, like, this is the guy you call when you accidentally murder someone.
Oh, okay, interesting.
And that's, like that's you know what I mean? It's like the Ray Donovan type. That's what the show is, or that's what the movie is. Michael Clayton's incredible.
Interesting. I saw a movie the other day, which I threw on the list, and it was like, it's called In the Mood for Love, and it's a Hong Kong film, and it's genuinely one of the best movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
No kidding.
I was like, whoa.
And you saw this recently? And that came out what year?
2000. So it was like, it's like... That movie was this indescribably beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like just a big, odd exploration of love, which is, we've talked about that before and how difficult it is to illustrate on screen. But this
was easy to do, but hard to do well.
Yeah, it's very, 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 right. Very hard to do well. And this was fascinating. Oh, my God. This movie it broke me. I loved it.
Wow.
I loved it.
In the Mood for Love.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have we gotten nerdy enough? Can we talk about Spielberg now?
Oh,
can we go mainstream?
Well, clearly we haven't gotten nerdy enough yet if we're not talking about Spielberg.
All right, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nerdy
This is Movie Hopping for Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, sometime in early April, 2018. Adam Hall, how are you?
I'm very good, I guess.
We're back. It's been a while.
Yeah.
I apologize. Adam texted me this week and was like, yo, we haven't done Movie Hopping in a long time. We did Annihilation, and I think we did the Oscar preview. And since then, the cinemas have been a bit of a ghost town.
Well, yeah, it's the start of the year. The cinema sucks.
Oof.
There's been some... No, cinema just sucks.
Cinema just blows, dude. Annihilation was an interesting February release.
Yep.
I think, weirdly enough, February has sort of carved out a weird niche where it's like all of the... It's Valentine's Day. All of the movies that are too weird for an Oscar campaign... and too small for summer are sort of dumped off there.
Sure. I think February is one of the more varied in terms of quality because it can be really good. Well, because last year we got Logan in February.
Right. And Get Out.
And Get Out, yeah. But then all of a sudden you'll get like 50 Shades of Grey and,
sure.
and 10 others just like it.
Right. So I think like Annihilation was that one this year that it's like, oh, that's actually a pretty good movie that just couldn't conceivably find an audience anywhere else in the year. But then you get into March and April, and it's like the halfway between January just trite garbage and the summer big blockbuster releases, and it's a bit of a ghost town. There's some tumbleweeds around here.
Oh, yeah. Pacific Rim 2, Uprising.
Yes.
Resurrection. Requiem.
It's called Resurrection?
It's Resurrection, Requiem, Reboot, Revisit, Fury Road. No.
It's not... All you have to say is this: it's not called Atlantic Rim, and that's
I know.
Insane.
Well, that's because they did the knockoff like Asylum sci-fi movie thing that was actually called Atlantic Rim.
I don't care what they did.
I know.
I don't. You have no excuse. Call it Arctic Rim.
There is no Atlantic Rim, though. There is a Pacific Rim, but there is no Atlantic Rim.
I get you, but take the monsters that were coming from the Pacific and put them in the Atlantic. That's it. Boom. I just pitched you a multi-million dollar blockbuster.
I like Arctic Rim because the visually, that's a little more interesting to me.
Arctic Rim's great.
Yes.
Put the robots in from fucking Antarctica. Have them with the polar bears.
Oh, I would love it. And I mean, this they should incorporate the thing into it. I mean,
yes.
Uprising kind of does. But
does it?
A little bit. No, I'm not even kidding.
I need to see Pacific Rim Uprising?
I was comparing Pacific Rim Uprising to the Back to the Future Part 2.
Well, then. Tell me more.
Well, not in a good way, though.
You have my attention.
Let me put it this way. I mean, I'm slightly critical of Back to the Future Part 2. I still love it, but I don't think it's flawless. And part of the reason I don't think it's flawless is because you see, Back to the Future Part 1... is a ridiculous premise, but it kind of understands that it's ridiculous, so it takes making that ridiculousness very, very seriously. So even though it is, you know, overblown and over the top, it still feels believable and kind of lived in and authentic, right?
Sure.
But it's not self-parody necessarily, whereas Back to the Future Part 2 feels like self-parody. To me, Back to the Future Part 2 ventures into the territory of being stupid with its own stupidity.
Certainly.
And
who you calling chicken? That line, all of a sudden we just introduced this random calling card that Marty McFly has.
The entire 2015 stuff I hate. Other than the hoverboard.
It's not other than the hoverboard, it's everything. I mean, no, it's just, it's memorable. It is a memorable vision of the future.
Yeah,
and
I don't care.
Most futuristic movies don't do that.
Human Centipede's memorable, I don't give a shit.
No, not exactly. Put it this way, if I had not seen it when I was 8 years old, I perhaps my opinion would be different.
Okay.
I admit that entirely. That is a movie, though, that has a vision of the future that is silly and as self-referential as it may be, is something that sticks with you. And even to this day, we're thinking, what did Back to the Future get right about our future?
I don't care.
What did it actually nail down about 2015? You know how many sequels, though, get lost in the shuffle that we...
Oh.
You know what I mean? All the direct-to-DVD, direct-to-on-demand, random spin-offs that don't bring back certain cast members. I mean, the fact that Back to the Future 2 2 is still in our zeitgeist means something. And that's all, that's my only argument, because the only argument you can have about Back to the Future is that 2 is better than 3 or 3 is better than 2. There's no, I mean, that's all we're arguing it up against, right?
Sure.
And I'm just saying, I don't remember any scenes from Back to the Future 3 on a regular basis, and Back to the Future 2 sticks with me.
My argument is just that, well, I at least enjoyed Back to the Future Part 3.
Oh, it's like, boring, dude. It's fucking boring.
Well, I think the same way about Part 2.
No, Part 2 is fun. Okay. Old Biff. Okay. I love Old Biff. What a great character.
Okay, whatever.
I'm also a sucker for, like, evil corporate overlord characters.
Like, it's so... It's
I'm a
so,
big Montgomery Burns
that
fan.
One is just trite. But by its very nature, it's trite, because it literally kind of recycles the plot of the first one at the second half.
Everybody knows. It's a remix. I know. Everybody knows.
It's flawed.
Of course it's flawed. It's hip-hop, though. It's hip-hop.
Hip-hop
it's
sucks.
It's recycling the same stuff that you've heard with a new spin.
It's clearly trying to be Michael Jackson, but it's not Michael Jackson, is it?
No, it's a Jay-Z sample of a Michael Jackson song. That's all it is.
Okay.
I love some Jay-Z as much as the next guy. Anyway, we're getting off subject. Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim is the same exact thing.
Okay.
Whereas, like, Guillermo del Toro kind of understands that, you know, I'm just going to have fun making a dumb monster movie, but I'm going to give it my own artistic flair to make it more than just robots hitting each other and monsters hitting each other, right? There's a quality of the filmmaking and the level of spectacle that just feels different and unique for some reason in that film.
Sure.
It's hard to pinpoint, but I was actually watching it.
Well, maybe not different and unique, but sort of revelatory.
Yeah.
In its bigness. It's in love with its bigness in a way that the Transformers movies aren't necessarily. Yeah.
It's charming.
Yeah.
And
I guess, you know, Transformers feels like a big movie that's trying to be small. It's like, look at these cool robots, but really, man, it's just a story about a boy in his car. Really, it's just a story about a mechanic that stumbles upon a tank, right? Pacific Rim feels like a small story that's trying to be big, mm-hmm. and I find that a little, as you said, I find it charming, I find it engaging.
Yeah, Pacific Rim is essentially Independence Day, if Independence Day was made by a good filmmaker.
Right. So. Exactly. But Part 2, you're saying, is not that, though.
Part 2 is where it ventures into self-parody, and I don't think anything works. Like I said, it decides to be stupid with its own stupidity, and it just gets obnoxious after a while. It's not even particularly well crafted, which is very surprising, all things considered. Yeah,
who directed it?
Stephen Knight? Denight or something like that?
What has he done?
Some guy from TV or something.
Okay.
Maybe, I think he did something with Supernatural? I don't know.
Oh,
it's exciting. It's not good.
Are we sure John Boyega is good?
He was fine in it.
No. It's not what I asked. Are we sure he's got it? Let me just put it this way. I rewatched Last Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Last week.
Did you?
Yeah. Man, those Finn scenes are a drag. those Finn scenes are rough, man. They do not hold up on a second viewing. It is a giant black hole whenever Finn and his side bitch, whatever her name is.
Rose. Come on.
That is a fatal flaw in that movie. And actually, they're on the screen for a lot longer than you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're in, that casino sequence lingers for a long time.
Yeah.
And I rewatched the movie and I came away with it being like, still like all the ideas, still like all of the twists and the surprises and the subversion of expectations, but man, we could have trimmed off the fat a little bit on this bone.
I like Attack the Block, though. I like Attack the Block.
That's a creative, interesting movie.
And I like him in it, though.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not sure he's a movie star.
I could almost, we'll see.
How much time do we need? We've had two Star Wars movies and a Pacific Rim movie. I mean, I don't know, man. Well, he's been, like, not good in both Star Wars movies.
He's fine. No, I don't want to say he's not good, but you're looking on, like, the level of charisma of, like, Harrison Ford, and yeah, he doesn't
That's what I'm looking for, right?
He does not have that.
No, but even Daisy Ridley is more charismatic than he is.
I think they're pretty close.
I disagree, I think, a little bit. I mean, I don't know. I
Oscar Isaac's more charismatic than both of them.
Well, we know that,
yes,
though.
I mean, we're not going to argue against that.
We've seen Ex Machina. He's going to tear up this dance floor.
He's fucking great. I love his little monologue about the Jackson Pollock painting. It's like, I forgot how exactly it goes. It's like, it's not it's not planned, but it's specific, but it's not specific. It's something right in the middle or something like that.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing.
What a phenomenal film and what a phenomenal actor.
Hey, Tomb Raider's good. And I still think it's good.
I'm so fascinated by this. I'm
not ashamed at all.
You tweeted that you like Tomb Raider, and it was the last thing I expected to read that morning. It was the last thing that I expected to wake me up from my slumber.
Yeah, it's not bad. I'm serious.
What's not bad about it? Not what's not bad. Not what's good. What's not bad?
What's not bad? I mean, as far as like an action film, it's pretty good.
Said it gave you National Treasures vibes, right?
Well, I'll get into that.
Okay.
The movie surprisingly has a good sense of stakes, and it actually bothers to give you a vulnerable hero, which I was not expecting. I mean, almost
Why were you not expecting it?
I mean, because video game movies do not have vulnerable heroes in them at all. And Laura Croft's character in this gets beat to shit, almost dies like half the movie, like horribly. Wow. I mean, it was actually kind of surprising. And I mean, a lot of that's it's helpful when it's weighted by Alicia Vikander, which I'll also get into. But I was also, and the action sequences are actually fairly well choreographed. I can see what's going on. And, you know, I'm also just a sucker for those kind of adventure films that involve, like, tombs and whatnot. You know, anything like The Goonies or The Last Crusade. It's stuff that I love. Mm. And, but I also said that the movie is cliched, and it is. It's derivative. It's by the numbers. It's all those things. But it kind of works still. It's weird. And the reason I relate that to National Treasure, because National Treasure is the exact same way.
Right.
But for some reason, it's hard to ignore that the craftsmanship on hand is good. It just is.
Yeah.
And
there is something to be said for an effective find the magical thing, and we're just going to put a bunch of peril in your way. And like just old school Indiana Jones charming action.
Yeah.
Stuff. Like there is a certain, because it's, you know why? Because it is so dependent on your star being charismatic that it's so easy to fuck up.
Yep.
And that's, you know what I mean? Like I did not see the original Lara Croft movies, but I would guess that Angelina Jolie did not exactly fit the part. Right. Just because she's not that type of actress. She's not like a wink at the camera indie type or Indiana Jones type presence, right?
Not this Lara Croft. Anyway,
okay.
Because there are variations on that character. She certainly fit the mold for the old video game character, but not this new one.
Okay.
And I was going to say, like, if I cannot praise enough, and I fuck anyone who says Alicia Vikander was not right for the part, because she makes every single scene that she's in.
Well, apparently your boobs were too small.
Whatever.
That's what they said.
I gotta admit, that was the biggest complaint I've had.
And I will tell you something, people.
I want bigger boobs.
I will tell you something, people of the internet and people of the world. Get off the perfect woman, Alicia Vikander. Get off her back. She's beautiful head to toe.
I am so in love with
her. I am beyond in love.
I might have, we've had this discussion with me and my fascination with Ryan Gosling, but after seeing Tomb Raider, I don't know, man.
You might have to change teams.
I might have to.
If I get to her first, yo.
You'd be heartbroken watching this movie. She gets beat to shit.
I'd get pretty heartbroken, I'm sure.
There's a scene where she has to kill somebody, and it is just, it's scary. It's haunting, and it's kind of disturbing. And she's like screaming and she's crying because she knows that she has to kill this guy, otherwise he's going to kill her. And again, it's not something that video game movies care about, because it's like, hey, it's a video game, we got to kill people. But in this, it's like, no, killing actually means something.
Wow.
I was like, what?
Wow.
I was actually kind of impressed. And like I said, Alicia Vikander is the most charming, beautiful, charismatic woman I think I've ever seen in New Hollywood. I mean,
she's incredible.
This was kind of the deciding factor for me. I was like, okay, was that original? Was it cliche? Was it this, and that? I was like, yeah, it's not great. But I was like, but did I love every single scene that had Alicia Vikander in it? And I'm
yes.
Like, yeah, I did.
I like Alicia Vikander in every single thing that she's in all the time.
But I really enjoyed it though. Like every time she's on screen, it's hard not to really kind of love it.
Yeah, it's weird because she doesn't have a dominating sort of look to her. I mean, she's...
No,
you know what I mean?
There's a strange natural innocence to her.
Yeah, there's a meekness to her as well. Like, she's not big.
She's petite.
She's very... her physique is very petite, but also her face is very welcoming. Like, I mean, that's kind of why I love her in Ex Machina, is because she's the type of girl that you could fall in love with.
And that's the point.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She's not an intimidating robot presence. She's not foreign. She's like any other girl, but she's also stunning. So it's got this weird thing to it. The fact that she can turn it up to 11 and can be like a convincing action star, I think is doubly as impressive.
She kicks ass. Oh, I loved her. Yeah. I loved her.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, You might come away with it with similar thoughts. You're probably going to say, like, yeah, no, it's nothing technically special, but it does, at the end of the day, it kind of works.
So. I will see it.
Yeah, you should.
I will see it.
Check it out.
I have a movie pass, so why not? You got nothing to lose.
There you go.
I think we're going to have a long conversation about today's feature film.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that we are.
Yeah, me too.
I'm very, very surprised that we are. And now, I'm not necessarily saying we're going to agree on a lot of stuff. This could lead to debate. This could lead to... some conflict, but
I
went into Ready Player One, directed by one Mr. Steven Spielberg, with a lot of skepticism. I walked in there ready to hate the fucking thing, and not only did I walk away enjoying the movie and find myself thoroughly engaged throughout the 2.5 hour runtime, but I also came away rethinking my relationship to Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
And I think this is a day of reckoning for all of us here. Because this dude ain't done.
No.
He's far from done. And I think somehow I came to the conclusion that he was done. And maybe I was right or maybe I was wrong at the time. But like, I was just thinking, all right, he's going to make movies for himself and we really don't need to pay attention to them. And it's... To ignore Steven Spielberg is not to miss anything. And now I feel like if we ignore Steven Spielberg, we're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
This is something... This is a movie he could have made in the 90s.
Arguably, maybe should have.
Definitely should have made in the 90s. No, but this is a movie he could have made 20 or 30 years ago. And yes, it's not exactly as sleek. It's not exactly as... It doesn't pop quite as much. It doesn't move quite as much. It's not as iconic. It's not as stunning visually. But it still has a popcorn quality to it and a real entertainment quality factor to it that he has not done since Minority Report. I mean, how long has it been since he's made a movie that is this enjoyable to a mass audience? I can't think of the last one.
Did Catch Me If You Can come after? I think it did come after Minority Report.
Okay, whatever that order is. If that did, okay.
If that's the case, then sure. Yeah,
because
after that, he started getting like very serious.
Yeah.
Like very.
I guess War of the Worlds would have been. Like,
well, maybe.
But I can't stand War of the Worlds. That's just.
I don't hate it, but
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
Sure. But between then, it's The Terminal. It's Lincoln. It's War Horse. Mm-hmm. It's Tintin. It's
that was
the BFG.
I guess the BFG was his last like magical Spielberg movie, but I did not see the BFG.
I did not either, but from what I understand, it is it's 70-year-old Spielberg directing it.
Oh,
it's
boy.
Not 30-year-old Spielberg directing it. You know what I mean? Okay. It's told through that lens. This one, I was ready to tear it apart. And there are things that I don't love about it.
Oh,
and
there's plenty of things I don't love about it.
Philosophically, but... I don't love it in a lot of ways.
Oh, the end. We could get. I have some issues with the
ending.
Sure.
This is going to be fully spoilers, as always. But go ahead. Keep going.
No. I think there are plenty of things to criticize about the movie. But similar to what you were talking about, I was kind of thinking like, yeah, you know, this is, you know, sort of vitalized and... his career at his peak. I came away with it with the same thoughts. It's like, this is Spielberg.
this is what he is.
This is exactly, you know, I was thinking like if for the market that it's shooting for, it doesn't work. And I'm like, yeah. I
understand the criticisms of the movie again, but like it is hard to walk out of that movie and say it did not move. It did the sort of Spielberg, some might say manipulation. Others might just say filmmaking that sort of,
I hate it when people say manipulation. That's what filmmaking is all
about. I understand.
About.
No, but with him, though, it's I agree. I understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying with him, it's a little more like, okay, you're using this particular dial, this sort of, you know, this angle, this character type.
I suppose. It's a
very predictive style that he perfected. So if he wants to play the hits in 2018, he's more than welcome to.
This was weird. To, like, turn people off, it's so... heavy-handed with the amount of pop culture references that are there. It's interesting that we're kind of in the cusp of the era where 80s nostalgia is a huge thing, and then it seems like every movie is referencing a Spielberg film, and then we get Steven Spielberg himself to come back.
Right,
and,
referencing and do, other things.
To reference his own work.
Really, yeah, in many ways, to reference his own work.
It was, and to make the most, like technically overblown version of that. And it almost makes me think, like, okay, we almost don't need to do this again. This could be it.
Right.
With the Spielberg.
Yeah, we've come full circle.
Can we stop?
Like, yeah, no, like, yeah. We've incepted upon each other nostalgia after, you know.
In this great, like, explosion, and that's it. Let's just
And now it's collapsing in on itself.
Let's move on.
Right.
Yes.
I'll be honest with you. We talked about this to death on multiple podcasts multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Nostalgia is getting old.
Mm.
And that's sort of a little redundant, but yes, the idea of nostalgia is getting old, especially for the 80s, and it feels like the idea of referencing something that was important 30 years ago misses the entire point in the first place. Like, the idea of referencing the Holy Hand Grenade in this movie, for example, is just to prove that you know what Monty Python and the Holy Grail is, not necessarily because you enjoyed Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
I tweeted about this, too.
Did you really?
Yeah. This was one of the weirdest references I've ever seen in a movie.
Does that feel so out of place to you?
I was
Well, it's also not accurate, right? It also sort of misses the...
Well, this is what I did you didn't read my tweet?
No.
You want to...
What'd you tweet?
This is my tweet. I might be able to do it. I was like, okay, so I saw Ready Player One. It was good. I enjoyed it. But I have one major complaint. So there is, in fact, a Holy Hand Grenade.
You sound so smug.
I know. Well, I am
Your
smug.
Tweet reads so smug right now.
Well, exactly. Well, it's... Well, come on. It's Monty Python.
When you write a book...
I'm serious about Monty Python, Nico.
Yeah, when you write a book, I'm going to stay away from the audiobook. That's all I'm saying. Stay far away.
It could be a masterpiece audiobook, and you know it.
I don't think so. We'll go out on a limb. I should narrate your book when you write one.
Oh my God.
Do I have exclusive rights to do the audiobook for your novel?
That's like, oh, come on. That's like Spielberg making AI.
Can you? Exactly, Adam. Couldn't have said it better myself. Couldn't have said it better myself. Keep going. Read your tweet.
Anyway.
You smug fuck.
Let me read it.
Go ahead.
Anyway.
You're not reading. It's an artistic representation of your tweet.
I can see it in front of me.
Go ahead.
It's there. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, so I saw in Ready Player One, there is in fact a Holy Hand Grenade, and they do use it. However, in the process of using it, they do not count to three. What the hell is up with that?
Right, that's what I was thinking.
I was like, they didn't count to three.
Were you really on the same wavelength on that one?
They didn't count to three. What the fuck?
Right, that's sort of part of it.
I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I don't think it's unfair to say that some of these projects, specifically Stranger Things and It, and you know, a number of these other sort of pop culture heavy 80s ripoffs of E.T.
Fucking Chucky.
Right. Sort of missed the point of the original art. And that's sort of one of the pitfalls of nerd culture,
yeah.
Right? It's the idea that I can recite the entire Pokédex from numbers 1 to 500, but I've never played a Pokémon game before.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's the idea that you're missing the entire... Your entire relationship is based on some made-up cred that you have.
Yeah.
And I was afraid that the movie was going to go there, and sometimes the movie did go there, but for some reason... When Spielberg does it, I buy in, and when these other shows and movies do it, I don't. And I'm not exactly sure what it is, but he has a way of recapturing that era and making it feel real.
Well, again, it's his hand, it's his craftsmanship. And here's the thing to understand about Spielberg is that, yeah, like, we see people do it all the time, but he clearly understands it,
right?
There is especially in a couple scenes, which I, oh God, I love a couple scenes.
There's one in particular.
You know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, of course.
Anyway, but he, not only does he understand it, but here's the important thing, guys. He's a good filmmaker.
He is.
he's a really good filmmaker.
No, he's just a solid, like, we're going to be studying him in film school for 500 years filmmaker.
Yeah.
He's perhaps by that metric, the greatest American filmmaker of all time. There's certainly not one that's more influential. I just don't think there is.
Oh.
I mean, if you
to American culture,
I consider Kubrick a British filmmaker, even though he was born in America.
Well, that's a different argument because I think Akira Kurosawa is the most influential filmmaker ever made because without him, you don't have George Lucas or Steven Spielberg, or even really Martin Scorsese. And if you cut those out of the equation, it's like, whoa.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Okay, I suppose. I mean, I just don't. I don't know if a guy came around. I mean, Jaws is such an incredible thing. Jaws created an entire category of filmmaking.
I was watching Jaws last night, and I'm thinking to myself, like, this is a fucking movie on paper about a shark eating people and a guy going through a midlife crisis. It has no right to be as good as it is.
No.
But holy shit, is it a good movie.
No, I mean, we're never going to see a movie like that again.
No.
We're just not. We are never going to see it. We have, because we've gone so far down the rabbit hole with our obsession with the past, that we're never going to see a movie that is that boldly pushing film forward. I mean, it's incredible. And you know what it is, too? It's a great movie. It's not just an important movie. It's not just in the way that, I don't know, say 2001 is an important movie and is a great movie, no doubt. Jaws is like, man, you could watch that 50 times and you never get bored of it.
I don't think it's aged at all.
It has not.
I'm one of those insane people who actually buys the shark. A lot of people hate it. I'm like, sure. No, actually, I think the look of it works for what it's about. It's a monster shark, and sure, it looks like a monster shark to me.
Right.
So
it works better than any CGI shark in the last 10 years.
Are you kidding?
Certainly. Yeah. So, I just felt that... I felt that Spielberg loved the material. Not necessarily that what's the name of the creator of the video game in the movie? Mark Rylance's character?
Holiday.
I didn't feel necessarily that he loved the material that he put in his video games. I wasn't even sure that the main character, Ty Sheridan's character, loved those cultural references, but I felt like Spielberg was really invested.
Yes.
And that, to me, I just kept thinking to myself, Spielberg's the star of this movie.
I don't
really care individually about any of these characters. This is, to me, a coming to Jesus moment of, nah, this guy's still doing what he always did very, very well, and although the industry's changing around him, we should still listen.
Yes, absolutely.
I hope he makes more movies like this.
Oh, yeah. No, I think he needs to make more movies.
He absolutely does. Like, quit wasting your time with The Post. I like, and by the way, I like The Post. You know I like The Post. And I like Bridge of Spies. But you make popcorn blockbusters. Keep doing it.
You do. No, you don't. You make the best popcorn blockbuster movies.
I know.
And we need those kinds. We don't need more reboots of, you know, Jurassic Park. We don't need that.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm happy that he decided to make this movie because it is so suited for him. It is so much a Spielberg film, and yeah, no, I pretty much I don't think it's perfect, but it's on the whole, it's a very enjoyable film, and I think actually a good return to form for Spielberg. Honestly,
let's get into the meat and potatoes. This is spoiler territory. Everything after this will be plot related.
First spoiler, there's an alien's pulse rifle in the film, and it doesn't sound anything like the alien's pulse rifle. What the fuck is up with that?
Are we going to do this all podcast?
I
need a beer.
They don't reference the Road Warrior. They reference the first Mad Max with the V8 Interceptor. Stop destroying the Interceptor. Stop doing it. George Miller has done it twice. Spielberg, like, I love that car, man. Stop fucking it up. Don't listen to George Miller. Don't follow in his footsteps. We need that car. Anyway.
Are you enjoying yourself?
I was so annoyed.
What else annoyed you? Get this all off your chest right now, please.
The driving backwards thing is pretty obvious when you think about it. So I was like, okay, like that's what
just
you...
call no the pop culture references though, they were all fairly accurate after that.
I was annoyed that the DeLorean never went back in time or forward in time. Instead, they had to use a Zemeckis cube, whatever the fuck that is.
I mean, you gotta think he went at least 88 in that race.
Right? Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
oh, by the way, Mechagodzilla. Okay, I gotta get this is a problem.
No, I'm not.
Mechagodzilla.
I was hoping we wouldn't go Godzilla.
Of course, I'm talking.
I was hoping I would go one fucking week without you mentioning Godzilla.
I like Godzilla.
Ugh.
First of all, Mechagodzilla does not breathe. I mean, maybe in some iterations, but in the one that this one was referencing, he does not breathe fire out of his mouth, for Christ's sake. He doesn't do that. He shoots it out of his eyes. Then I'm sorry, but it's a clear staple of that character, and it's fucked up. Although I was very happy with the fact that there were rockets coming out of his hands. That, which is stupid, but I love it because it's the most ridiculous image in all those movies. So that was nice. But anyway, yeah.
Guess what?
What?
Also, no zombies in The Shining. Did you know that?
Yeah, that too. I thought we're gonna save The Shining.
Okay. The ending of this movie is kind of bullshit.
Yes,
it's just kind of bull.
No, it's a lot of bullshit.
And the whole philosophy of this movie is a little bit bullshit.
There's a lot of criticisms I was reading about this where someone was describing the view of pop culture fans as regressive.
Yes.
And when I saw
certainly. I mean, yeah. We definitely are.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a dystopian society where people live in junk towers and go on their VR machines all day.
But the problem is at the end of it, they don't really learn too much.
Right. No, exactly. No, here's my problem, right? I mean, so one complaint or one think piece that I saw online was that big red button at the end of the film should have been pushed.
Yeah.
The idea of destroying the Oasis. It should have been a reality. We should have taken this because the Oasis is an evil thing that creates, again, a dystopian future where there are two companies that are warring with each other over three imaginary keys in a virtual world.
It's turned people into
emotionless robots. Yes, entirely.
It's like, you guys are living in trailers doing VR bullshit. Get out of that and fix the world,
I know.
Fucking assholes. Because
it's a pretty bad world out there.
Yeah.
Not a great world. I mean, we get a little peek at the world, and it's not great.
It sucks.
The premise of the movie, and I would assume the premise of the book, though, is just totally off. And that is the idea that the Oasis needs to be saved. We keep hearing over and over again with Ty Sheridan's character, whose name is what?
Parsibel.
We keep hearing, I gotta save the Oasis because Ben Mendelsohn is gonna take it over and is gonna turn it into, I don't know,
I was very confused about his plans.
A bad video game, I guess?
He was gonna profit and make
money. I guess
money.
He was gonna make money.
He's gonna make a lot of money off it. He's a bad corporate dude.
No, but if Ben Mendelsohn gets a hold of the Oasis, he's gonna turn it into something bad, I guess. And I guess the main consequence is that the Oasis turns into a lame video game. Yes. I think shouldn't the consequence here be there is no wealth left in the world and the 1% is
like a literal
is
thing.
Literally creating internment camps. So
it's that much of a clear separation. 1% literally everybody else.
It's literally right. Isn't that the real consequence of the world? But that's not the point. That's not the goal of this movie. This is a movie that believes that the world is not worth saving, that its stupid video game world is saving. And I think if you operate from that premise, there is no ending that can satisfy you.
I almost don't want to believe that, but it's kind of true.
That's exactly what the movie says.
Like, at the end of it, I was like, wait. So, what? Like, I was, when it said, like, oh, so we had one caveat, the Oasis is closed 2 days a week.
2 days a week. You get 2 days off from being corporate slaves.
Here's an idea. You can, I'll meet you halfway. Keep it open 1 day a week, closed every other day. How about that?
How about we destroy the video game?
Or we destroy it.
How about clearly that the video game is objectively a bad thing for the society? I mean, and it dances around that idea. I mean, because we have that scene in the beginning, which I thought was remarkable, where Ty Sheridan is going down the tower that he lives in, and you see everybody on every level playing the video game in their living room.
But in ways that tell you a lot about the people themselves. Like, there was that old mom who was dancing around a pole, because in her world, she's a stripper.
Sure.
Which is great.
Which, yeah, and it was creative and interesting and also terrifying.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, because it's a Spielberg movie, there's an optimism for the things that people love. Because ultimately, here's the thing. Spielberg makes very few movies. As a matter of fact, only one or two movies where the object of its characters' desires are bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, Jaws is a movie where you gotta get out of the fucking ocean. Minority Report is not exactly a movie that looks favorably on technology. But beyond that, like, yeah, E.T., this alien is nice. You should keep it in your closet.
You forgot about Munich. Munich is incredibly bleak.
Sure, Munich is bleak as well. Yeah, there's very few, though. Yeah. Indiana Jones, totally fine to be looking for the Ark of the Covenant. You know, it'll burn your face off.
Not the Crystal Skull.
Fair enough. But, like, you know, Jurassic Park, ultimately, yeah, the park is scary, but they're going to keep it open. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks favorably on science. And he has such a hard time looking judgmentally on his characters. And I think that's the problem in a movie like this, because the premise is terrifying. Yeah. And there was nowhere else it could have went.
Sure.
You know?
I was a little... I hate that when it... Because it wasn't even, like, the... Like the last act, like kind of an Arrival where it has a misstep, but for me at least, it sort of picks it up in the last like couple minutes. So I left the theater satisfied. Whereas this is like the last, like the very last second, I was like, oh, what? That was stupid. And then end. I was like, ah. So I kind of left a little like, well, I wish you didn't end on that note. Like, right. That's not something you should be optimistic about.
Exactly.
But hey, it was fun. And yeah. Then I left.
And guess what? This $500 billion, we're going to split among four people.
It's like, come on.
We're not going to give it to charity. We're not going to look to rebuild the ghetto that I grew up in. We're not going to start a fund in my aunt's name.
I like the secret... this is off topic, but I really like the how it secretly slides in lesbian... to one of the characters.
Yes.
Which you would...
Very secretly.
When you think about it, you're like, wait a second. Oh!
Right.
Lesbian!
Right. What do I win? Ding, 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 ding.
That is such a good scene. Oh, I love that. You could hate it if you... I don't know what you feel about it, but I loved the Shining scene. Oh, man, that was great.
The Shining scene is, for me, perhaps one of the most moving scenes I've seen in a year.
I loved it. It was fantastic.
And it's, again, this is Spielberg. And we know Spielberg has a deep admiration for Stanley Kubrick.
Yes.
I mean, there is a complicated history there. There's no question about it.
Yep.
We can go through the oral history of AI till the cows come home. But this is a guy that gets Kubrick, and he where I'm like, yo, reference the fuck out of this movie. I don't care how many Easter eggs you throw in. A fucking bathroom in room 237.
I was like,
I was shocked they went there.
Exactly.
The naked woman would fucking hug him and then start chasing after him. It's incredible. I'm shocked.
Oh, it was wonderful. He did not love The Shining when he first saw it.
Spielberg did not?
No, because he saw it. He's like, I don't like Jack Nicholson's performance in it. Uh-huh. And he thought it ruined the film. And then he's talking with Kubrick, and he's like, so what did you think of my film? He's like, well, you know, I like this, and that. And then Kubrick's like, well, hey, it sounds like you didn't really like my film. He's like, no, I really liked it. And he's like, nah, but you list off more things that you didn't like
right.
about it.
Yeah,
so.
But you hesitated. You stuttered. You stuttered, Steve.
And he's like, so what did you like about it? It's like, oh, I thought Jack went over the top. Oh, really? And then he...
Yeah, don't say.
Yeah.
And then Jack Nicholson overacting.
And then, like, Kubrick just kind of like, well, here's why I'm right and you're wrong.
Yeah.
Essentially. And then Spielberg goes on to say, like, and I've since seen it, like, 20 times, and it's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. I love The Shining. It's my favorite horror movie of all time. It is perhaps my favorite Kubrick movie of all time.
That's respectable. Not my favorite Kubrick film.
It's probably not, but it's up there.
Yeah.
And when I mean, again, that scene was not just... We're going to reference things for the sake of referencing things. We're going to dig into exactly why this movie is horrifying.
Mm.
We're going to give you exactly the reasons, I found the ticking clock interesting. The whole ticking clock of like, you have to find this until they got to the zombies floating around in the bar. Like that was just sort of neither here nor there, which is sort of out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of time in The Shining and the idea that this hotel is a ticking time bomb where eventually this father is going to attempt to murder his family.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the whole construct of that in a video game is fat. Like, if there was a Shining, if there was a Shining video game, that's what it would look like.
Oh, it'd be like this great survival horror game, which is kind of what they go through, honestly.
Right.
It was great, and again, aesthetically, it's like pretty much perfect. It's wonderful, and for illustrating why it's scary. Again, it's nice that we actually get Spielberg to do this because he's smart enough to be able to understand why The Shining is scary, and then sort of like over stylize it or over express it in order to show it to us as the audience in a way that actually makes sense, because I can understand why people would walk away from The Shining and be freaked out but not fully understand why it's scary.
Yeah, in many ways it is. Yeah. I mean, besides the fact that he becomes an axe murderer, there's an underlying just eeriness to that hotel.
It's just like it's like being violated every second you're in the hotel, and you don't always know why. It's just that atmosphere is totally unnerving. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my favorite scene in the movie. Mm-hmm. I like the race scene too. I really like the race scene.
When they destroyed the V8 interceptor.
Yeah, when they destroyed the V8 interceptor.
They destroyed the V8 interceptor. Destroyed it. The V8 interceptor is dead again.
Yes.
I like that car.
I liked that one, and I liked every scene that Mark Rylance was in, quite frankly. I thought Mark Rylance was pretty good.
Weird sort of I don't know.
It's a weird performance.
Like autistic performance.
It's a choice.
Yeah.
It's a choice.
I thought the autism thing might have been a deliberate thing. Sometimes actors do that. I don't know why they always choose autism, but
yeah.
But it was good. Yeah. It was convincing to me.
He's good in a lot of things.
Yeah,
he's great in Bridge of Spies, and I like him in Dunkirk. And don't get at me, bruh.
Okay,
right, we'll go to fisticuffs right now.
I was gonna say
Mike Rylance, and we're going to war, George.
Everything, every movie he's in, besides Dunkirk.
I like him in this. I think he's good. And I liked the whole construct of going through his history, and I liked the museum. And it felt like a movie, and this is, I think, because it's based on previously existing source material, it can sort of think through the premise a little bit more. This is always my major gripe with sci-fi, is that when you have a creative, interesting idea, you don't go far enough with it.
Mm.
This happens a lot, is that it'll be a really interesting premise, and it's like, man, if you had more fun with it.
What do you mean?
This is a movie that truly imagines what it would be like if we were all living in a video game.
Okay.
And I think imagines it in a really interesting way. I think the whole idea of this company, that entire existence, I mean, they are promising, the product that they are selling their shareholders is, we're going to find this hidden prize in a video game. Mm. I mean, I just think that, yes, there would be a whole industry that would sprout up around it, sort of tangentially.
Okay.
Maybe we would have internment camps. I mean, even if we wouldn't, like, it still feels fully thought out and imagined. It's not just, oh, look how cool this video game is. Again, thematically, the movie is flawed, but I didn't feel like they had left stuff on the table. I did not feel like the script wasn't fully realized.
Interesting. You and I have like opposite views of sci-fi.
Okay.
I prefer it when they don't tell you anything about the world, even if the filmmakers know.
That's not really what I mean.
I love it when filmmakers know everything there is to know about the world, but they're like, no, we're not going to tell you about it. We're just going to drop you in it and have you experience it through the characters.
It's not a matter of telling you. It's not a matter of telling you. It's a matter of taking your interesting premise and fleshing it out to its fullest realization.
Okay.
One of my flaws with Benjamin Button, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which is a movie that I despise and one that we've argued about from time to time.
We never argued about Benjamin.
Have we not?
No.
Because I despise that film. And one of my problems with that movie is that they have a great concept of a guy aging backwards, mm-hmm. but they do nothing interesting with it. They don't tell you anything about what that process is like. It's just sort of a traditional love story.
He's a Mad Max character, though.
Is he? That's what he's supposed to be?
Yeah.
Explain Benjamin Button to me. I know we're going to go on a tangent, but what do you mean by that?
I mean, the whole point of, like, he's just your vessel. That's literally all he is.
Not really.
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's a vessel through what?
Literally, his entire existence is the recognition of mortality through life. Like, that's how he comes into the world, right? Where he's basically almost dead, right? And he's aging backwards. I remember watching the film and thinking about this in like great detail and wondering why did they choose to make him 80 years old when he was birthed. And I was like, well, as a vessel through the story, we're kind of exploring what it means to live and die and how important those two things are. How perfect is it to have your lead character be someone who is literally almost like a vessel for life and death in his very existence? Right?
Isn't everybody, though? I mean, I just didn't... I didn't think...
I suppose, but it's not as obvious if it's just a baby, you know? And that's just the nature of film. That's why it didn't really bother me.
I just thought... I was watching it and thinking, man, you could have told me so much more or shown me so much more about what that process is like. Like, I don't feel like if a guy's aging backwards This is the most remarkable thing. Show me the ramifications in the real world of this. Show me. No, but like, because there's going to be someone that takes notice, right? There has to be. Stuff happens in the world as a result of something this remarkable, but instead it just decides to focus on a fairly traditional note-for-note love story.
I don't think that. I think they focus on the supporting characters reacting kind of a lot. It's also a long movie, but.
It is a yes. It's a long movie that does not fully realize its concept. That's all. That's my problem with fantasy and sci-fi a lot of the time.
I guess,
like Blade Runner, I will give it credit, is a movie that fully fledges out its world. Mm-hmm. Like that is a movie that imagines every single permutation, and although it doesn't tell you everything, I never feel like you haven't given this enough thought. Right.
You once said that Blade Runner doesn't focus on the most interesting things.
It doesn't.
And I was like, what?
It doesn't.
Like,
no.
What? The replicants? Because I think that is the single most interesting thing
about
that world.
No, it's the romance that's just the least interesting thing.
Oh, well, that's not really the primary focus.
Sure it is.
Why do you think the romance is the primary focus?
It's a love story.
No, it's not.
The whole thing, of course it is. The whole arc of the film is a romantic arc.
It's a noir.
No, the entire arc, and this, I guess... With this revisionist history of the Ridley Scott director's cut, we have been convinced that it's not a love story. But the movie is very clear about the fact that it's a love story.
I don't think it is.
Very clear.
I don't think it is at all.
I mean, Blade Runner 2049 definitely looks back on it as a love story. Doesn't it?
Yes, but it also looks back on everything else.
No, it retroactively says that romance is the most important romance that has ever existed on planet Earth.
That is one of the
foundations of Blade Runner 2049.
It's easier, but it's also easier to do that because of the way Blade Runner chooses to end, and also because of the fact that Blade Runner exhausts every
because
other
of the way
characters.
Blade Runner and how did Blade Runner choose to end by banking in about a lovers on the run story?
Sort of.
That's exactly what it does. Yeah,
that's not the emotional climax of the movie, though. The emotional climax of the movie is all through Rucker Hauer's character, and once you figure that out, it's like, oh, it's really more about this, and the fact that he falls in love with Rachel is just incidental to me.
I'm glad you feel that way. I wish I felt that way when I was watching the movie. All that aside, the only point that I'm trying to say is Blade Runner, especially Blade Runner 2049, examines every corner of that universe.
Yes.
And it shows you an interesting piece of technology. What does paper look like in 2049? What is our idea of virtual reality? Is it just audio? Is it visual? What's it like to make love with someone like that? Right? It goes through the entire lovemaking scene. You're gonna put a real life person inside a hologram. Like all of these ideas, you can only do this by thinking it through. And Blade Runner definitely does that. And Ready Player One, I felt, did the exact same thing, and that's what I was happy about, because I was afraid that this was just going to be a empty shell of a movie that just throws in a bunch of member berries for no reason.
Sure. You know? No, it works. I was because I was sort of worried that it was just going to be an overt celebration of fan culture with no real substance beyond that, and in certain areas it certainly is, but I don't know. I think, like kind of what you were saying, its exploration into this world feels a bit more authentic than something else. There is more substance to this than certainly what I thought there was going to be based on the trailers. And I don't know. I guess a lot of what helps me through that is the fact that I didn't mind some of the characters. We haven't really talked about the characters, but
no, we haven't.
I'm not, which is surprising because I don't love Ty Sheridan.
He was in Mud.
I like Mud.
I love Mud.
Yeah.
And I love him in Mud.
Me too.
But now it's been a couple years, and sometimes when child actors grow up, it doesn't exactly translate.
Some people think he's not charismatic. I didn't mind him in this. I didn't mind him at all.
I spent the first half hour thinking he was Ansel Elgort.
Yeah.
And I turned to my friend and I said, that's the guy from Baby Driver, right? And he goes, no. And I went, that's definitely the guy from Baby Driver. And then I looked up a picture of the guy from Baby Driver, and I said, that's the same guy. Like, because
they have their full-ass lips.
Oh, my God. These fucking luscious lip white guys, they're all the fucking same. We have added another one to the list. We had a running list of the boring young white guys, didn't we? We had Ansel Elgort. We had Taron Egerton. We had the dude from Han Solo.
Oh, Aaron Einreich, whatever.
Aaron Einreich. They're all the same. They have the same names. They all look the same. It's all the same. And now we're going to add Ty Sheridan to that. That's my one complaint with the movie.
But they're not bad actors is the thing, at least.
No, they're all fine. Yes. But I just...
Because I actually...
There was a
childlike glee for his character that usually worked for me. Someone came home. I am so easily distracted.
Yes, you are.
We gotta like...
Do I have to close this blind?
Maybe.
Okay.
No. No, but I mean, who's a better example of a very, very lovable lead guy?
Well, I guess Chris Pratt is the standard now, right?
So he's no Ryan Gosling.
No, but... he's no Ryan Gosling.
He's no Ryan Gosling.
I don't know, but I'm not necessarily looking for likable. I'm looking for different. And I just don't think any of these guys
are different. That I agree with. Yeah, I can understand why they're easy to, or hard to distinguish. I don't fully agree with Taron Egerton, but I definitely see where you're coming from with Ansel Elgort.
And who's the, Tom Holland is another one. They're all the same.
Sure.
I swear to God, if you put Ty Sheridan in the Spider-Man suit tomorrow, I would not. If he played Spider-Man in Avengers, I would not think twice. Mm-hmm. I literally wouldn't. I would be like, oh yeah, okay. He grew up a little bit and had some Botox.
Yeah,
yeah, exact same dude. So you know.
However,
what?
I really like Olivia Cooke.
I like her too. Well, I love her and Mean Earl and the Dying.
Oh, I love. Yep.
She's in another movie that just came out
with the girl from The Witch.
Yes, and, called and what?
I don't know, but Anton Yelchin's last movie.
Yes. So it is called.
I should probably see it.
Thoroughbreds.
Okay.
Yes, it's still in theaters. Literally just came out like two weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, she's great. I really love her.
Yeah. I had weird feelings though when the movie sort of. So there's this line that...
The dance scene?
No. There was this line that... Who's his friend in the video game? The big black guy in the video game.
I don't remember.
I don't remember his name, but he's the black friend. The black best friend.
Yeah.
Artemis.
Yeah.
Olivia Cooke's alias in the video game. Because for and there's this whole sort of back and forth that the two have when Parsifal eventually tells me, you can't see me in real life, you're not gonna like what you see, whatever. And it turns out that they woman that doesn't look that different from her video game character, except for the fact she has a weird birthmark.
That's about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're behind the lens of this video game. We really get to know who the person is. We don't have to judge a book by its cover.
It could just be a coincidence. It's fine.
Well, I feel like they lost an opportunity. It's not.
It's not like, what, no, did, you, I know. What did you expect?
I get it. I mean, it's attractive white people falling in love. It's
but I'm fine with that. They sort of touch on that with his best friend's character.
Right, which as you, Helen is her name in real life. I don't really love that actress. She's in Mass annoyingly bad in it. and I didn't love her in this, but yeah, I don't know. I all sort of well-rounded edges.
Yeah, but that's exactly what I expected.
But it's a Spielberg movie, sure. Right about.
Yes.
This is a movie that is 80% animated, basically.
Yeah.
It's the greatest achievement of this movie.
What do you mean? Well, hold on. You mean like motion capture animation?
Yeah, I wasn't ready to watch a video game. Okay. And that was part of the reason why I didn't like the trailers and why I was so put off by the movie. This movie sort of sold me on video games. And it sold me on the look of video games in the way that, like, Tron sold me on video games back in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes there's a fakeness to this type of animation that annoys me in literally everything, and it didn't annoy me here. No. And I think I'm trying to exactly figure out why that is, and I'm not exactly sure.
It could be the premise and how aware you are.
I don't think it is.
I don't know.
I don't think it is, because I watched an animated guy for 80% of the movie. It's probably an hour and a half is spent in the Oasis, and I had no desire to go back to real life. As a matter of fact, I preferred it when they were in the Oasis.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Me too.
And there's something about that's impressive to me.
Yeah. Well, again, maybe you could say it's our awareness could be a factor. But again, there is also the fact that it's Spielberg and
there's a vibrancy to it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's sort of what I'm talking about, and how the clear sense of joy that you get out of being in there, and the separation of that between the other reality probably helps. You know what I mean?
Sure.
The fact that... that's true.
They shoot the real world pretty bleakly.
It is. I mean, there's nothing interesting. And there's nothing visually interesting about the real world other than, like, the trailers, which are kind of inventive and fun. But it's all gray and boring and depressing.
It's very gray.
It's trash.
It looks like The Post.
So you kind of...
The Oasis looks like...
You long for that color and that excitement.
Right. Looks like Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Favorite pop culture reference?
Ooh. I'm actually not gonna say the V8.
Okay.
Although, you know, the fact that it was Mad Max and not the Road Warrior was kind of awesome to me. And I can't go Holy Hand Grenade because they fucked it up.
They did.
They fucked up the Holy Hand Grenade bad. What was the one that I really, really loved? There's so many that, but they're kind of like. I'll just go Mecha Godzilla. I can't say The Shining.
It is The Shining.
Yes. But besides The Shining, you mean?
No love for the Iron Giant?
Eh.
No love for the Iron Giant.
Eh.
I'm disappointed in you. Do you not like the Iron Giant?
No, I like the Iron Giant. But I don't know. Something about that did not like wow me when I saw it, especially since, I mean, it's another version of the animated character. I don't know. I'll say this. I was happier to see the aliens pulse rifle than almost anything else. The fact that was in the movie just made me smile. So there you go.
I'm looking at a list of...
Spielberg was going to put an entire Blade Runner scene in this movie, too, but because there's one in the book, but they couldn't get the rights from Alcon because they were making 2049.
Did you realize Wade was briefly...
Hey, look at that.
I should mention, by the way, I was buried in my phone for 15 minutes of this movie because I was playing HQ.
Nope.
No, neither do I. So there was... Okay.
Were they the book? Or the movie?
I think they're referring to the book. Okay. So I introduced Adam to HQ the other day. I'm shocked you had not heard of this. This has been like the hottest thing for 4 months. You got to get on those internets, bro.
I don't like those internets things.
You
got to
get
bro.
On it. You got to get on those Reddits.
They're nothing to me.
Get on those Reddit threads.
This is the very thing we're criticizing about the Oasis.
Check the gram a little more often.
You're feeding into the Oasis. We need to destroy it all, Nico.
I introduced Adam to HQ because Ready Player One sponsored the episode of HQ and they were giving away $500,000 or no, 250?
Quarter of a million, I think.
250. So that's, they increased it to half a million at one point. 250,000, and I needed an extra life, so I said, Adam, get the app so I can get an extra life from you. And then I'm playing the game, I'm in the theater, and I'm answering the questions as the movie is going on, and half of the questions are about Ready Player One. And it's like in the book, Ready Player One, there's a spaceship named after a character in which of these books.
And I guessed that one right, too, funny enough.
And it was question 7, and that's the one I lost on. I thought, I've never been more pathetic. I'm literally watching the movie, and I don't know what the answer to the question is.
What did you say?
I said The Shining. The Shining was in the movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And then there was Philip K. Dick, which was... Ironically, I don't think it was in the movie, although Spielberg has made a Philip K. Dick adaptation.
All I did was say, okay, which of these looks familiar and which could conceivably be in the book? So if The Shining is in the movie, I figured, all right, could be in the book.
But it was Vonnegut.
Apparently it was Vonnegut.
Fucking Vonnegut.
Damn Vonnegut. Oh, again, the bane of my existence, Kurt Vonnegut.
Assholes. I've never read a single Kurt Vonnegut book.
Really?
No.
You haven't? Not Fahrenheit 451? That's Vonnegut, right?
Oh, I haven't read that. Oh, I have read that. Not in years.
Are you going to see the movie? Or it's a TV movie?
No.
Michael Shannon?
No.
No?
I have no interest.
What's his face? Michael B. Jordan?
No.
Okay.
I don't care.
Right. Fine. Any more movie recommendations? Or any more thoughts on Ready Player One?
Yeah, it was good. Go see it.
I agree.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
We got to start paying attention to what Steven Spielberg has to say, I think.
Yes.
I think we need to start, because he's not going to be around for much longer.
None of those guys are around for much longer.
I mean, think about it.
The film brats are old, man.
Yeah.
They're all really old.
It's crazy. It's like we're going to get like 2 more out of Scorsese, 3 more out of Scorsese. I don't know.
We'll get more out of Scorsese. We'll get maybe, I'm saying we get 5 more movies at least out of Scorsese and 10 more movies out of Steven Spielberg.
I mean, at this rate, he's doing like 2 a year now. It's crazy.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I just hope he does more of this. And
Brian De Palma maybe gets one movie, and same with Francis Ford Coppola.
De Palma's never working again.
No, he makes movies. He still makes movies.
Does he really?
But not in America.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yep.
Okay. I thought he was dead for the longest time. Only recently found out that he wasn't dead.
Yeah. No. That guy has an interesting career. I don't even love all of his movies, but
neither do I.
He has a fascinating career.
Not as good a director as any of his contemporaries, but fascinating nonetheless.
Because the only one I guess he compares to is at least could compete with is George Lucas, which is tough. But it's,
I guess, yeah. Has he made anything as like generation defining as George Lucas? No.
But at the same, he has more good movies, by definition.
Well, yes, when you make five movies and four of them are the exact same.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Okay, cool. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
There we go. I think I'm falling in love with Spielberg again. I really do. It's a complicated relationship. I rant about him a lot.
Sure. I've been on good terms with Spielberg. Because there's been plenty of his recent films that I really had no issue with. Honestly, The Post was the only one where I was like, ugh, that was just nothing to me. But that was about it.
I really liked it. I don't know.
I know, that was weird. But I love Bridge of Spies. And I have nothing against Lincoln. Lincoln's fine to me. And I love when did I stop like loving Spielberg? Because I love Munich, and I know you don't care for Munich.
No.
I absolutely love Munich. And then I guess what comes after? I guess it kind of stops at War of the Worlds.
What does he do in between Munich and Lincoln?
Well, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Right. So, that, there you go. That
which I don't that. Hate.
That explains that.
Everyone hates it. I'm one of the very, very few who does not.
Do you want him to make a fifth movie?
No. Now, this is what I don't want. I do not.
This is the problem, right? It's like all of the projects. He's doing like a West Side Story remake, which I'm not interested in at all.
Do you like West Side Story?
I love West Side Story, but I don't need to see it done again. Okay. That's my favorite musical, but like, I'm good.
That's fine. Yeah,
I get it.
I get it. I would love to see Spielberg do it, though.
Okay,
I think it's tailored for him. I think it's great.
I guess he's got that lined up, and he's doing another indie, and he's doing some more historical dramas. I would assume. I don't know. Yeah.
There's a lot of like directors that I love that are doing stuff that I'm just not interested in. Like, I don't want to see an Indiana Jones 5. I don't want to see David Fincher make World War Z 2. I'm sort of tired of Tarantino, and I wish
I'm way interested for his Manson movie though.
Well,
I am so in on. I want to see Tarantino go back to L.A.
Yes, now
that's all I've wanted.
That's what I like the most about it. But I like recent Tarantino has very much frustrated me. I
am becoming very jaded on The Irishman. I am becoming very skeptical.
I have grown to really love Silence. I guess Scorsese is one of the few directors out there that's, and I guess him and the Coen brothers that have stuck with me, you know, pretty strongly.
I
so that's nice. Why?
I just don't think modern Scorsese is all that good.
Why?
It's become a little bit of self parody, just
like
a
what?
Hair. Just a hair.
Like what?
You know my thoughts on The Departed.
But The Departed's really good.
You know my thoughts on Wolf of Wall Street. It's just a little much.
Okay.
It just is. No, I think...
That's two movies. He's made quite a few movies. Hugo is a masterpiece, as is Silence, and as is...
I haven't seen Silence.
And I think Shutter Island's very underrated.
I can't stand Shutter Island.
Oh!
I can't stand it.
God, I love Shutter Island.
I can't stand everything about Shutter Island. I hate the ending. I hate that movie. I hate
the ending.
I hate the ending.
Oh, my God.
No, I hate everything about that
Why?
Movie. That movie... It just is... That movie benefits from a director that can get out of the way, and Scorsese can't get out of the way.
What are you talking about?
Scorsese does not, by his very nature, cannot help himself, and that's fine. When you're making a movie like Goodfellas, or when you're making a movie even like Raging Bull, Shutter Island is just a little too much.
I think it's one of his more tight films. That's weird.
Put the camera on the tripod for that one.
It is what?
Keep it on the tripod. Let's not move it around all that much.
Oh.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
No, I just don't think that material suits Scorsese all that well. I just don't.
I think
a noir, I mean, that's a traditional noir story.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with a twist, obviously, but like it is a.
God, I love that ending. I love.
Do you?
That ending? It's one of my favorites.
It's yeah. the same reason why I hate Cape Fear, as a matter of fact.
Now, I'm not huge.
I don't like when Cape he does noir. I think that's what it is. I don't like when he does noir.
Well, Cape Fear, he's not really doing noir. He's doing Hitchcock.
Sure. But he's doing a traditionally noir story, though. He's remaking a noir film, right? Yeah. So it's the same sort of thing. Movies like that benefit from a director that's a little more... Benefits from an Orson Welles, I guess. Where, I don't know. Like, his style is a loud Italian gangster movie. That's the type of material he's suited for.
I guess.
Sue me. That's why I love Gangs of New York.
Oh, yeah. Gangs of New York is fantastic.
You love Gangs of New York?
Yes.
I thought we've argued about this.
No.
I adore that movie.
Yeah, so do I.
And a lot of people hate that movie.
Fuck them.
It's a great film.
That's arguably his best film that's come out in the 2000s.
Amen to that.
It's
Hallelujah. Oh, now you're making sense.
Yeah, fuck. For me, it's.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I thought you hated this movie.
What?
Who do I know that hated this movie?
I don't know.
Someone came out. I said, "Gangs of New York is his. That is the best movie he's made in the 2000s." Everybody says it's The Departed. I don't think so.
No, it's better than The Departed. And I love The Departed.
Oh my God!
I love The Departed.
This makes me so happy.
But yeah, no, Gangs of New York is a better movie.
By far.
Yeah. I showed it to a buddy of mine, and he messaged me after, like, "That movie's perfect. It's perfect, Adam.
Oh, it's not perfect, but that's what makes it perfect."
But this is my buddy, who's just—he's not really a snob.
Oopsie-daisy! Like, yeah. I love that movie.
I don't give a tumpany fuck about your moral conundrum, you meat-headed shit sack.
Punish
the man who murdered this poor little rabbit. Do you understand?
Bill the Butcher.
So good.
I can't. Oh my God. Yes. Amen.
No, for me, it's Gangs of New York, Hugo, maybe Silence. I have grown significantly on Silence.
Wow.
Which is a slow as fuck movie, but oh, it has not left me.
Anyway, The Irishman, though. I heard Pacino on a podcast this week. He was like, yeah, they're digitally recreating our faces to show us at a younger age.
Is that for just like one scene?
For multiple scenes.
But it,
I'm not in on this.
Is it for like flashback sequences? Or it's,
I don't
the
know
whole
what
movie?
I don't know, but from what I understand, there is a lot of recreation going on.
Okay.
A lot of CGI coming in The Irishman.
This should not be put on Netflix. What the fuck is it doing on Netflix?
I don't know, man. I think we're going to be very disappointed. I'm just bracing for it. I'm just bracing for the possibility that this is not what we thought it was.
Well, the reaction is going to be it's the best thing ever for like a week, and then people are going to be like, yeah. It's actually maybe not that great.
Exactly right. Just get ready.
So.
All right, good. That's a podcast.
So at the end of the day, the one thing we figured out after talking about Ready Player One is that Black Panther sucks. So that's it. That's what it all builds to. Black Panther is not good.
Fair. Couldn't have said it better myself. All right. You're at Some Adam Hall on Twitter.
I am.
I'm at Funny Nico Tweets on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can go to TooManyThoughtsMedia.com. For all of our shenanigans. We didn't do Why Is This a Thing this week. It was Easter. Mm-hmm. Hope y'all had a good one.
I didn't want to do Why Is This a Thing either.
Yeah, I was not in the mood.
I wasn't in the mood either.
Yeah. So we'll be back next week with that. Subscribe, rate, review on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
You know the drill. Thank you so very, very much for listening. Adam, thank you for joining me yet again.
Yep.
And until next time, we're here to tell you.
Happy movie hopping.